Hey, hey, how's everybody doing? I love this crowd. Thank y'all so much for coming and braving the... Hadn't this weather been weird this summer? I didn't want to complain about having a June that was a little breezier than usual. One, because my birthday is in the middle of June, and I got to enjoy a nice celebration. Yes, another Gemini in the house, Mr. Roots. But also, I knew if I complained too hard in June, that'd mean that August might be awful. So we're in the midway point. So I'm still in a bit of a hesitant space about complaining about weather, because who knows, avoiding a monsoon or a volcano or something like that here. Did I see something about El Niños? Does that happen? Oh, goodness. Let me just hush. No one played Jumanji anytime since. Well, welcome back to Studio Sessions. I was being sincere when I said that I love this crowd, particularly, I see mostly regulars here tonight of a few reasons that we had slightly less RSVPs in number than typical. I'm all about accountability. I'll go ahead and share some news with you that led to a domino effect of reasons why. One, usually I do a radio spot. They say, hey, everyone come out. Stairs is coming up. And then Shelby puts some music underneath it. And I say, hey, at this time, on this day, blah, blah, blah. Forgot to do that this month. For one very reason that it came to my mind today when we were talking about it is that if you haven't heard the news, our dear coworker Mary has moved on from WYXR, and she's usually the person that very kindly reminds me of things like that when I forget. So we miss Mary already, and this is one great reminder of that. But y'all are still here, and I really appreciate that. Another reason that I did not calculate why we have a few less RSVPs is I didn't realize until right before that the album cover has the word sold out on it. And so someone reached out and said, man, I really want to come to this. I'm like, all right, well, let's split the room. And they're like, no, it says it's sold out. And I was like, it does not. And then it occurred to me that it does. Every bit of materials that we printed for this says sold out on it. And that's a great thing for one reason, that of all the records that we've done, and if you've never really heard this backstory, I was inspired by an event that Chad did with Jerp Thompson in the Green Room years ago for Hot Blooded Soul to show off the speakers that you now have in here, before the station existed, before any of that. I was still the Daily Memphis and all that. But I thought, okay, it's obvious that Hot Buttered Soul is like the quintessential long playing record from Memphis that's meant to be sat and listened to in one sitting. It's not about the singles. I mean, who wants to sit at the radio and hear Isaac Hayes do his thing for 18 minutes? It's about listening. And I thought, okay, if I come up with one record that would be a great analog to do to just do that again, that'd be great. Like, that was literally it. I was like, can I come up with one other record from Memphis that we could do that to? That was Loop On. That was November 2021. That was sort of a pilot. We didn't even think we were going to call it. We didn't have a name for it yet. Then the next year, we came up with a series of six, and then six and the sixes, and now we're here. But long story short, the reason I didn't even think about the word sold out on this record is because this is maybe the only record of all the ones that we've done that, like, I didn't fall in love with because I found it myself. This record was in my house always when I was a child. This record is among the records that I inherited from my mother and father when I got into music, when I got into records, when I got interested in sort of deciding this path. Well, I guess Hot Buttered Soul was in the house too, but this record I've always known. So it never really occurred to me this for the first time. Like, all of this is not any research that I've had to do. It's literally one of my mom's favorite records. And this week is my mom's birthday, too. So close the loop on that. Thank you. So all that said, Robbie still works with us. He's not here because he's supporting Music Export Memphis. They're kicking off their 10th anniversary. So congratulations to hostess straight from a source, Elizabeth K. Wine, 10 years of music export Memphis. So I don't have any other bad news to deliver. Look there, Robbie is here in spirit. And I want to thank Independent Bank, Memfo Presents, and the Memphis Listen Lab for supporting us for this stereo session. And y'all ready to jump into it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I would like to present to you and welcome our special guest for the evening, Ms. Deborah Glees Barnes.
Thank you.
Hey, Conrad, that copy of the record there.
Shut the lid, everybody. So, this is Deborah Barnes. Great to see you.
You too, me, you too.
You've been such an angel in my life, in my career, since knowing you and knowing your family. You know, I can think of tons of fun times that I've just bumped into you. I remember seeing you at the Art Bar one night that I was really having a good time. That was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. But I didn't want to say, you know, that you're always such a joy to be around. And it really means a lot for me to introduce you to my friends here that come to Stereo Sessions every month.
Hello, everybody. Good to see you.
You know, there's a lot of different narratives that come to mind when I think about this record. When you see it, just looking at it, what comes to your mind specifically?
Well, that Wanderlust's voice was so beautiful before we even had a chance to sing with her. And to have this done was amazing during that time, because it's many years ago. I don't know if the year is on the back or not, but it was quite a few years, though.
1983.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'll share a couple of things that I want to, okay, believe.
Oh, might need to see something. I
want to lap out, I'll first say that Wanderlust is she lived in Huntsville, Alabama. This record was recorded here. Wanderlust did not live here full time when she recorded this record. And I'll tell you a bit about how she arrived at recording this record. But she does send her regards. I spoke with her. She wasn't feeling so well this week. This record, like I mentioned, it's always been in my home. And when I got into building a record collection, there was staffs and it was high. And I was like, well, you know, I'd like to know more about Memphis gospel. And this one was sort of one that helped me get started to understand smaller private press records. And, you know, as you mentioned, Wanderlust's voice is amazing, but there's a lot of incredible songwriting on here as well. And we'll jump into all of that and Wanderlust's story, but I wanted to start with you and if you could tell me your story and how you arrived at singing.
Well, I grew up in a sort of a singing family. My mother was a singer. She sang with Kirk Whalen's grandmother's a group many, many years ago. And my dad was a preacher, and he loved to sing. So when I was a little girl, they found out that I could sing a little bit, at least around 3 or 4 or 5 or something like that. So I started singing in the choir, children's choir and all like that. So from there, they wanted to give me voice lessons, so I'd had that, and I just love singing. And one of the things that I love to do is sing in the background. And so I've had very good opportunities to sing background for people who really sing well, and so I'm thankful for that.
From a standpoint of technique, what is different being a background vocalist versus being out front from your perspective?
From my perspective, it's just not as nervous energy. When you're in the background, of course, you have to really know what you're supposed to be singing to support the leader, but you know, the stage fright is a little less. when you're singing background. And you, we have fun as a group of singers when there's a group. And it's just a fun thing, kind of easy going a little bit.
And you were born and raised here in this area?
I was born here on Beale Street. Yes. My father was the organizer for the Beale Street Mission for Black Men. He was associated with Jimmy Stroud's Memphis Poplar Mission, and he got together with him, and they had a Beale Street Mission, and my mother was a teacher, so they together worked that. And the year that I was born, we lived on Beale Street, and I just love Beale Street. So, yeah.
So tell me about your, I want to phrase it appropriately, I was going to say romantic and professional relationship with your late husband, Calvin Duke Barnes, but how did you meet him and how did you begin singing together?
I went to a meeting at Monumental Baptist Church, and this is where I met my husband, Calvin Duke Barnes. He was in the group Push Ensemble, and he was leading a song that day, and I just, you know, my eyes were just mooning all over. And I just felt that he was going to be the one, and he became the one. And so we were together for a couple of years, and I went to sing on the road for a while. Then when I came back in 1980, we were married. And we were married for 39 years. He passed away April 5th, 2019. But he was very instrumental. He was he learned the piano while we were dating, and he always sang before I even knew him. And he was just a very good person, a husband, a father, a musician. He would volunteer to sing for groups in the city. And some of this I learned after he passed, that, you know, so many people he played for.
You mentioned something interesting. So the Operation Push, the Operation Breadbasket Ensemble. So he was politically active in any way, or was it just he liked to sing? That's Jesse Jackson's Operation Push, or the Rainbow Coalition, as you may know it. They had several musical outfits over the years. Ben Branch was the saxophonist that played and was the conductor of the original Operation Breadbasket Orchestra. And so the story goes, as Dr. King was on the balcony before he was assassinated, moments before he was assassinated, he was aware that Ben Branch and the orchestra would be playing at the dinner he was attending that night, or was to attend. And he asked that Ben Branch, who was a Memphis-based saxophone player and the conductor of the Operation Breadbasket Choir and Orchestra, that he would play Precious Lord, Take My Hand. And so that song was known as Dr. King's Final Request. And so Ben Branch did record an album with Precious Lord, Take My Hand, and the choir and the orchestra fulfilled that request. So this is, if not the same group, an offshoot of that group.
Of course. They had several. And then they would start off with the ensemble when I came. And then there were other, then it became a choir at one time before I stopped singing with them. And so being a part of that, I was politically active as far as being a little girl and attending the rallies before that time. And Push was a place where we could learn about what was going on and support when we could. And so I enjoyed being there, especially singing and needing my husband there. Yeah.
So was your plan, your outlook always to sing spiritual music, or did you sing any secular music as well?
Oh, I loved all kinds of music. My mother and father, you know, they were in a church very heavily, but when we would drive out of town, when we'd leave Memphis, there was no more gospel music as we know it here on the radio. So we heard all kinds of music. You know, I loved Tony Bennett and anybody that screams, whoever we could hear. So it was R&B. So they did not limit us to gospel music. You know, we heard symphonic music, all kinds of music, Broadway. And so I love to be a part of all kinds of music, you know.
Well, at what point, if you don't mind me asking, did you join the Church of the Seventh-day Adventists?
I joined the Church of the Seventh-day Adventists after my husband and I got married, and a friend of ours invited us to the New Covenant Seventh-day Adventist Church. I went, and I joined soon after, and then several months after that, after my middle son was born, who was Christopher Barnes, my husband joined the church. So it was about maybe just less than a year. So we had been a member of the Adventist Church for over 40 years.
Maybe you have you familiar with the Seventh-day Adventist Church? Okay. Could you share with me some of the facets of the church? I have some cousins that are Seventh-day Adventists. Yes.
Well, one of the outstanding things of the Seventh-day Adventist Church is their music. It's very beautiful. And they don't sing a cappella, but they have beautiful voices. They have strong ears. One of the Oakwood University in Huntsville, Alabama, is one of their prominent places where the college students learn about singing. And, of course, we love to be at church on Saturdays, and we call that our Sabbath. And we just love people, and we're very kind and, open to welcome anybody that wants to come and visit. You don't have to be Seventh-day Adventist. But the music is really one of the things that drew me to the church.
Well, you answered my next question. Was what was it like going into that experience, and what were some of the first things that drew you in? You mentioned the music. Can you take me back to the sights, the sounds, and maybe some of the key figures early on when you joined the Seventh-day Adventist Church as far as music?
Well, some of the pastors, they were moved from church to church. Our pastor then was Isaac Lester. And he and his wife were a very good team for the church. And sometimes we got a chance because of that. My husband and I were also members of a group called Gail Murphy and Company. And we would travel around the country singing, and we would meet, very prominent people, the Mississippi Mass Choir, and so many that I'm so beautifully seasoned at this time in my life that I'm not sure who all we met. But we had a great time, enjoying all kinds of music, but especially our group sang gospel, and Gail Murphy was the writer for our group, and we sang other songs by other composers such as Richard Smallwood, which she's a prodigy of, just so many different kinds of music we were exposed to in our travels.
You're good at anticipating my next question. Miss Gail Jones Murphy, when I was a child, I grew up at Mississippi Boulevard Christian Church right up the street. You can almost see it from the window there. And I was in the Angels of Praise Children Choir under the wonderful direction of Mr. Anthony Richardson, Anthony Q. Richardson, who I believe is retiring this year. He was a very exciting man, a very excitable man. But there always seemed to be a treat between him and Dr. Leo Davis, who was the minister of music overall over the church as I was growing up. Whenever Gail Jones Murphy would come and sit with us as young people, I didn't quite know why it was important or why it was interesting or why it was different. And even sometimes she would come to services and she would be spend time with the sanctuary choir as well, maybe sitting on a song or two. It seemed like there was a dimension of church that would be unlocked whenever she would come in. And when I was a young person in children's choir rehearsals, when she would very occasionally come and spend time with us as young people, I don't know that I knew that she was a beautiful woman when I was a child. I don't think that I had arrived at myself yet. But as an adult, I can say that I know now that she was, but angelic, I think might be the best word that I could use for it. It was like a virtuoso had walked into the room. I didn't know what good piano playing was as a very young child. I'm talking about 5, 6, 7 years old. But this woman had such a command of music and of people altogether that it was like a spiritual experience beyond what I could articulate even now, although I'm trying my very best. Thank you. And, you know, it would only occur to me how important this record is, which, you know, has a curious cover, and it captivated me since childhood that she wrote all of these songs except for one. To know that it is the same woman, it tickles my brain in a place that again, I cannot articulate. From your words, can you tell me more about Gail Jones Murphy, what she has meant to your craft, and what she meant at this moment of your life?
Well, Gail started playing piano when she was about 3 for her church. And just she always had a great ear. And because she was so well gifted to play in the Adventist churches where she grew up, she just continued to play. And she went to college to, you know, further her learning and everything. And she became a teacher in the university system. And she just was very skilled. She was very kind. She was very open, you know, to share what she knew and her gift and everything. So she was just great. She was just great. And I still admire her because she's still singing and traveling around the world, singing and doing concerts for people. And her voice is even better. She's had challenges with her voice, but it's soaring even higher. And she's becoming even more spiritually, you know, affected and affecting other people by her voice and her playing. People just love to hear her play because I don't know if they remind her of Richard Smallwood, but she and Richard Smallwood have met on occasions, and she's given tribute to him on the piano and voice. So she's just really big in my life because I met her when I was around 20 or something. But my parents knew her, and I'll tell this story, because I didn't learn it until she told me later, that her mother passed away when she was very young. But my mother and her mother knew each other. And Gail, she may be a year or two older than I am. Anyway, my mother went to her mother and said, I want your little girl to play, you know, teach my little girl how to play and sing and stuff. And this didn't happen until at least 20 years later. And I was so amazed and almost brought to tears that they even knew each other. And so she's just always been, yes, noticed in my life without before I even knew.
You know, it would not be saying enough to mention that she's world renowned, but that she's composed more songs than most people know.
Over hundreds.
Hundreds of songs. And I was a little upset looking for a clip of her from this era. The song that she, you know, there's not a lot of videotape, or at least that I would have access to on YouTube. The one song that I could find of her singing from this era that I thought was sort of visually compelling, she was singing with like a Jamaican patois, like a faux Jamaican thing. And I thought this is maybe will give people the wrong idea about the Serial Session. It's not a Jamaican record, but that was sort of a fun thing. It seemed like for, I'd imagine if you've written so many incredible songs, you get bored after a while and say, let me see if I could write something way outside of the box, and that seemed like that was maybe her want.
I think that one was No Problem.
No Problem, something along those lines, yes. But you joined her group, you and your husband joined her group. What was that experience like?
It's just always adventurous. I'm not sure that we were Gail Murphy and Company at that time.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, they were foreseeing things to do, and George Edwards was very instrumental, and he produced that record, I believe is what it says.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, it does. Sorry about that. Well, I'll share a little bit more about Wanda Lott, who is not a Memphian. She was a military child and moved around a lot, and ended up at Oakwood College at the time, was now Oakwood University now, in Huntsville, Alabama, the Seventh-day Adventist historically black college, and was studying music. And her roommate was George Edwards' niece or goddaughter or something along those lines. And so he heard Wanda singing. She had sort of been becoming popular around campus from talent shows and that sort of thing, and impressed upon her that she should come to Memphis and record this record her senior year of college. So after that, she tried to, you know, do some of her own solo thing, but she didn't have her wonderful backup singers back in Memphis, so she could not pull off all these songs, only one or two of them, because she could do solo. So she sort of took some time away from performing these songs and ended up joining another gospel group later on, and that's sort of how her career picked back up.
Lord, I want to be all that you ask me to be. Why don't you use me, Jesus? Lord, I want to be all you require me to be. Why don't you use me, Master? Let my light so shine. Thank you.
What came to mind when you were listening to that first side?
I remember some of those songs in the background. And some of those times I didn't hear anybody but me because I'm singing the melody or the soprano part anyway. But we had a really good time. Gail, let's just say, wrote most of those songs except for Go, I think.
The finale, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Miss Lott told me when we spoke the other day that she came down with Mr. Edwards to record, and it was basically just like a weekend or whichever the case is. It's just a few days of recording. Do you remember that process of learning these songs and working in the studio on this record?
Not in particular, but we had already learned the songs. And it didn't take us very long because Gail was a very good teacher and we learned songs. And the studio that we recorded in was the Kansas Voltech studio off Parkway. It was the Kansas school was around that area, you know. And so we came in there together and we had a good time. That's all that I remember, that we learned the songs and we sang the songs. And then, of course, Wanda was very, you know, well gifted and trained and everything, so it didn't take her very long to do the part either.
Had you recorded much at that point?
No, that was in 83.
Yes, ma'am.
No, I had not. I had not. But my husband and I sang together for concerts and weddings and banquets and all like that. And so when you heard the song We Have a Love, well, then I was a little overcome because my husband and I sang that for a lot of weddings. And I remember that and just, you know, just remembering us doing that together, and he's not here anymore, just kind of, you know, kind of pulled me some way. Yeah.
Was it an adjustment taking what you were used to doing in a live setting as an ensemble to the studio? Was it at all an adjustment going from singing live to having something that was among your first studio recordings? Being in a studio, was that different for you?
Yeah, I think it was different. I hadn't been in the studio a lot.
Was that in 83?
Yeah, man.
Okay. No. But I had sung with somebody where we would be singing on stage quite a bit, but I never went to the studio with him. Yeah.
Well.
And darling.
You and your husband did record a single for Three Angels Records, so I'm assuming that was after.
Yeah, we recorded a single together. It was called God Will Take Care of You. And we recorded that the next year. And it was released on the month my daughter was born, right here, Carl. And so they, every time people saw me, they saw another baby coming. She was the third baby, and this is my son, Christopher Barnes. He was the second baby. And so that was the recording that was released in, wait a minute now, I may not be telling the truth of what I hear. Carla's born in 85. Yeah, so that was when it was released, early 85, we recorded in 84. After that, in 83, that we keep.
Well, since we've mentioned them, your children have spawned their own music careers as well. Several iterations and groups and collectives and ensembles and collaborations. Would you like to run through them?
No, there's so many. I don't really know what they all are, but anyway. They love to sing, and they always heard it, you know, before they were out of the belly. They heard music, and so they do that. And my oldest son was named for my husband, Calvin Barnes, senior, and he's Calvin Barnes, the second. But anyway, this is my stand-up son. This Christopher Ball, and then my daughter Carla Barnes. So, and then I have a baby son, Neek Behates. Well, he's like the baby son, and his name is Courtney Barnes, and he loves to collect all kinds of albums, all genres of music. He has as many as you see around the wall, he has. And he's supposed to be selling them.
Yes, and I have already bought some.
Anyway, they all love to sing. When Courtney was born, he sang alto all the time. He sang alto, it was amazing to me. But all of my children sing, they sing well, and they sing all kinds of music. And one of the groups is the Sensational Barnes Brothers, which consists of my son Chris and Courtney and Calvin, the oldest one, decided to leave me and go to Dallas with his wife the last Monday, but he's the band leader and pulls all the music together. And he sings as well. He's a top tenor singer, but he loves to play piano and stuff even better. And my daughter, Carla. And if need be, they all sing together with the Sensational Barnes Brothers. And then there's another group called the Barnes Family that was one of their first groups that sang together as a family. And they have recordings out, and they all have beautiful voices on that. And then Carla and Christopher and Calvin. Yeah. All of them sing all over the world. And they back up very prominent people. Recently, a couple of years ago, Carla had opportunity to sing with Peebo Bryson that just passed. She sang a duet with him here in Memphis. And Christopher performs everywhere. He sings sometimes with the Barqués and all kinds of people, and he acts, and they just love singing and acting and being active and trying to make their way, whichever way the Lord directs. They do a great job. They all write, and they write together as collaborative writing, and I'm so blessed and thankful for them.
Well, we left out Black Cream.
Black Cream. See, I told you now. See, Black Cream. My son Courtney and Christopher started that group, and so they sing reggae and. R&B, and whatever you want to hear, just about. And so that's another group that they've been singing now for how many years you think? That? About 9 years, see, more than I know about. Anyway, yeah.
And I say that just to say that I can get back on Carla, because see, the record that you and Calvin did was so amazing. And it was James Anderson?
Yes.
And then Jureen. I got up there now. I'm going to get to where I got to go. We're just going on in order now. Yeah, I mean, put that back out now because I was listening to that. I was playing it on the radio. Put it on back out. So I keep on pushing. Okay, thank you. I had to get on to you about it.
Another one that Carla sang for many, many years. I don't know how many, so don't ask me. I have to ask her. But she sang with Smokey Norfolk as background for many. Anybody know Smokey Norfolk? Yeah, so anyway, that was a surprise to me. But anyway, she sang a long time ago. Who have you sung with, Chris? Everywhere. They're in the studios with people I don't even, I'm not aware of, because they don't tell me.
Yeah, the Al Green record, aren't you?
Al Green?
Well, I memo. He did the demos.
Demo.
Yeah. I'm telling too much. Well, let's get back onto this record. See, now I done got too far down the rabbit hole. Okay, I know what I want to ask you next. Let's do a bit of a roll call if we have time. We spoke about you and your late husband, but I want to give some shout outs to all the people who sang within this ensemble. If you want to share a story about them or their strength or something that you remember about them, and we'll start with Claude Jones.
Claude Jones is the brother to Gail Jones Murphy, and he is, of course, a church musical leader and teacher of the Bible at his church on their Adventist. And he is also a songwriter. He writes music as well. And so he and Gail collaborate quite a bit. And he's just a very faithful, supportive background singer, mostly. But he can do lead, but most times he does background.
Donna Owens.
Donna Owens is another young lady who, she's several years younger than me and Calvin and Bob and Gail, but she has a beautiful voice. She's a sibling of 12 children, and she just is glorious. And she's now ministering as an elder at the church, and she's just beautiful, has a beautiful voice, a beautiful demeanor. She's great.
Angela Robinson.
Angela Robinson. Do you know, Angela Robinson's voice reminds me of Olita Adams. She has a beautiful voice. She was also a student at Oakwood College, maybe then, university. She's here. She teaches about health and food, and she's married to a minister. And, she wasn't then, but anyway, because that was a long time ago. Anyway, she's very, very, very beautiful voice. Even now when I hear her, I think of Olita Adams' voice.
Jerry and Stanley Shotwell.
Jerry and Stanley Shotwell. Jerry was along with me, and she has a lovely soprano alto, strong voice, and she sings very well. So she and I are at the top when you hear it. And if you know the soprano voices, those are ours. And she has so many degrees in different things. She's a chaplain now, and she's a nurse. She's been a teacher for cosmetology. I mean, she just does it all nonstop. And she has a beautiful voice and loves to sing.
And Stanley Shotwell.
Stanley Shotwell at the time was her husband. He sings well as well, but he was our drummer. And he's a former police officer. And he's a phenomenal man. I can't say young man, but I'm going to say young about all of us, all right? He was a great person.
On bass, William Murphy.
William Murphy married Gail Jones-Murphy. And before they were married, I believe, he was the bassist for Isaac Hayes for many years. And he's just phenomenally great. And they're still married, and they live in Orlando. They've lived in Nashville before that, back and forth. They just travel everywhere.
Now, we'll do, how about lastly, before I go to a bit of controversy, Mr. George Edwards.
Mr. George Edwards was a member of the church, New Covenant, Seventh-day Adventist, when I joined there. And he's very entrepreneurial. He just puts his hands into things that really, you know, he says, this is gonna happen. And he's pretty, pretty well on point when that happens. But he's also from a musical family. His brother wrote Duke of Earl. You heard of Duke of Earl? And they all sing, Anyway, he was out of the military, and he decided that he wanted to produce and guide people into singing. He was responsible for bringing a lot of people here. It was Fred Hammond's group before.
Commission.
He brought them here, to perform at Mississippi Mass Choir. Just all take six, he brought them here. And, he was just really strong about having good music in this city and all around. And so he also, of course, produced my husband and I, Calvin Duke Barnes and Deborah Barnes, not D-E-B-R-A, but D-E-B-O-R-A-H.
There you go. Yeah, it is misspelled here on the background.
But anyway. Anyway, he was responsible for getting us together, and Jerry suggested that we do God Will Take Care of You. And I had heard that Aretha Franklin singing that song. So anyway, we kind of took a few liberties, but nothing like Aretha Franklin. But my husband and I put out "God Will Take Care of You" in 1985. It was released.
Well, other than this LP and Robert Claiborne's LP, which we did for this series a couple of years ago. And if you weren't here for that, I don't remember, he was a keyboardist who had no sight at the time. He wasn't born without sight. He gone blind as a child. That record is phenomenal for its synthesizer work. And as far as I can remember, Gail Jones Murphy was not involved in writing or producing or playing on that record. But other than this one and that one, there are no other LPs on George Edwards' Three Angels records. Do you know why he didn't continue to record full albums for artists? He only did a handful of singles, which you mentioned yours with your late husband. Do you remember it all?
There was some controversy, something going on with Three Angels. I think the name, Three Angels. And so he released that. But he's always, you know, got his hand into singing and promoting good singers.
Well, I think two for two great records on his label and great singles as well. Mix That Art, and I want to make note of, engineered by William Brown, who is a titan of Memphis music through soul, through all genres. Yes, it is William Brown. He and his brother Bertram and Randy Brown. Who knew it? You knew it. You knew it. Randy, Bertram, and William Brown, three brothers who are truly important to Memphis music, both on stage and in the control room. Amazing. We'll finish the series with Quick, for which Bertram was a member for the stereo session. So one last little connection. Now the controversy. I mentioned it a little bit earlier that this record has an album cover which is designed by someone named Raymond Wade, and people just really want to know why it says sold out on the front. What is that about?
Must have been sold out.
We're gonna have to table that answer for another day. Maybe
Raymond Wade. I'm not sure if he was from here, but he was connected to Mrs. Wade, who was a teacher in the Adventist school. And Raymond is an artist, a great artist, and he is in Texas. I think Dallas, I'm not sure. Not exactly sure, but he was in Dallas. And so he was responsible for the work on the front.
We'll have to find out on time. Maybe I can put it out via a newsletter or a blog or some other way when we find out why the word sold out on the record. Another thing that caught my eyes. Yeah, usually we don't let these things linger this long, but we don't have a definitive answer on that. But we're going to blame Raymond Wade or whoever wrote Sold Out on the record for confusing everyone and thinking that we did not have any more seats left to this event. And one more thing is that this hand, which I'll take the liberty to say that I assume represents the hand of Jesus, grabbing someone to save them from both this tide, these rushing tides of waters, and it appears to be lightning over the horizon. This is a black hand. In 1983, was that a bold choice for such a thing? In
1983,
and I was born in 1993. I don't know where was there a lot of conversation about whether or not Jesus had this dark of skin at that time? Could you take me back? Is this striking to you in any way, or would it have to strike it in 1983?
It may have been in 1983, but yeah. And that hand is maybe a little lighter than it ought to be, but.
I don't know. Am I that dark? Yeah, I'm darker than that. Yeah.
So I think that was very ingenious. Is that the word? I use words that Reader's Digest, I just like these words. But sometimes I don't know what they really mean. But anyway, I think this was really a great idea because he's very, very good. Raymond Wade, look him up.
We're going to have to get in touch with Raymond Wade. But it also, he may have to share some of the accountability with the last person who's mentioned in these credits is cover lettering designer Terry Powell. So we might have to find Mr. Powell, and maybe Mr. Powell can help us figure out what sold out means.
Yeah. Terry is still around. He's a great person. He's maybe around my children's age.
Well, is he? No, he along with me. Okay.
Terry had a Fisher Price type life at the time.
Proud of a large family of very gifted people. And he's very good. His sight is very limited right now, too. I think he was born maybe diabetic. But he's still, you know, active as much as possible, and he's doing great work.
Well, maybe we won't bother him about the cover design in that case.
Oh, no, you're just asking.
All right.
He can talk.
Sing and shout.
ye therefore and teach all nations. Go, go, go. Go ye therefore and teach all nations. Won't you go? Won't you go? Won't you go?
Inaccurate. I think that they sang "We Have a Love" at my mother and my late father's wedding. I don't want to put no rumors out there. I would call my mother, but we don't got that kind of power. I want to read these liners. I don't think that I've done that in one of these yet, but I find it interesting that George Edwards took the opportunity to write a little bit about Wonderlot. If one loves gospel music, the chances are that one will also love Wanda. Wonderlot's music has in it the power to invoke in all who listen the most spiritual of human impulses. The most noble and spiritual of human impulse is to love, which is a manifestation of the Spirit of God. Listen to Wanda, listen to the words she sang, and you will see that music. Sorry, y'all, you know, we drink beer at these events, so. Listen to Wanda, listen to the words she sings, and you will see that music can be a powerful force in the lives of people today, leading them to the life eternal.
I thought that was good that you worked.
So all those songs are written by Gail Jones Murphy, except for that last one, Go, which was, as Miss Wonderlock told me the other day, was made famous by Shirley Caesar.
Catch the Hem of His Garment was a Salt Stir song, right?
You love Daryl.
We're gonna close it all now because I know that we got it. Well, it's still light outside, but folk got to get home. So, do you have any final thoughts about the record and its legacy? Usually, we have. Well, it would have been wonderful to have Miss Lott here, but do you have any final thoughts about the record?
I just loved it. I loved doing it. And her voice is just amazing. And I think it was a really good opportunity for us to work together. And she's still singing. And it's just a beautiful thing. It's the beautiful thing.
Hasn't Been Wonderful That Happens, Deborah Bleese Barnes here. You can, oh, well, let's get into that then. Go ahead. You can let them know a little bit about it. Tell them what you just told. I had asked about secular music earlier. You did hear that in your pocket.
We can't buy this.
I had opportunity before this to be background singer with Ray Charles. I traveled all over the world for a camera. From 1979. And you'll see if you go to YouTube, you'll see me. I'm always the shortest one. Singing with Ray Charles on Saturday Night Live, November 12, 1979. And then there's also a recording of us on YouTube with Gladys Knight and the Pips. Ray Charles was her special guest, and we, the Raylettes, were there with the Pips. And they invited us out. It was just a really great experience, but we traveled to many places. In the airplane, which is I'm not really fond of, but that's what we did. And we always made it back home. And I was also able to attend his funeral. Yeah, where Johnny Mathis was there, Stevie Wonder, and Willie Nelson. Oh, I love Willie Nelson, yeah. So though, anyway, I just wanted to let you know that, because they said, you don't say very much about that, but I did it. And I'm thankful and I'm grateful that my mother and father, because I wasn't 21 yet, I was buried 20, on the way to 21, and he had to speak to my parents in order to allow me to come and sing with him before I was 21. About the rubbing of
the wrist,
I don't know anything about that at all. But he was a very comical man. He was a nice man, and he probably did, many of the things maybe that you saw, but I wasn't a part of that. That's why I'm no longer with him. Other than he's not living anymore.
Yeah, so if you sing it with him, you'd have to be singing way high up on the mountain, yes. There were some other Raylettes that were from Memphis, correct?
Yes, Trudy Coran was a member of the Push Ensemble, so Ray Charles came to Push because he was a Push follower and from Chicago with Jesse Jackson. Whenever he would come, and he heard Trudy Coran, yes, sing at the time. She was Trudy Coran. And as soon as he got back, he invited her out. And when she was there a few months. He needed a soprano because she was a contralto. She could sing anything, she was contralto. And so Trudy suggested that he call me, and that's what he called me at my house. And my husband and I, we weren't married then. We were in downstairs, and he was playing the piano. And Ray Charles called me on the phone. And he wanted to ask me to come and sing. And then I told him I wasn't 21, so he talked to my parents. And even though my daddy was a preacher, my mother was in the church and everything, they said I could go. And so I went and sang with Ray Charles for 2 seasons. And it was a very, very good experience. But I was glad to come back home because there's a lot of traveling and living out of the suitcase. And all of like that is fun, but you got to be built for that kind of thing. All right.
Well, I was going to say that Trudy Coran's nephew is Jeff Coran, who was a board member of WYXR and the host of Thursday Night's Sparky Town, DJ South Memphis Jeff.
They're brave people.
Absolutely. So before we wrap up, where was your favorite place to travel to?
I loved Hawaii. And I loved Australia. Other people there was so nice. I went to the Philippines. That's a beautiful place, to Manila, and I got a chance to go there another time with the Christ United Methodist Church with the music. So I got a chance to go back to Manila, Philippines, and it was just beautiful. There are a lot of poverty there and wealth, and I saw both sides, and the people there are just beautiful and strong, educated, loving people. And so those were a few of the places. Oh, and I remember also Hong Kong. I was very tall in Hong Kong. So I'd walk along the streets and the grandmothers and everybody, and they'd be looking up at me. I'm saying, oh my goodness.
Well, you were also black, so. Thank y'all so much. We'll see you in the next studio session. Thank you, Ms. Deborah Bleese Barnes.